Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
Well, Josh, I don't want to waste a whole lot of time this week. I just want to say that I'm going to take this banana and shove it straight up my ass. How does that sound for an idea?
I have a better idea. You could go to adamandeve.com and get something that was made to get shoved up your ass. How's that sound?
So are you telling me that God did not make this banana to shove up my ass?
No. It was supposed to go in your mouth and in a non-sexual manner.
It will eventually.
All right. Well, go to adamandeve.com, use the promo code STATIC, and you'll get 50% off of that item to stick up your ass. They'll also include 3 DVDs of people most likely getting fucked in the ass. They'll include a free mystery gift, which might be something like Astroglide to help you fuck yourself in the ass. And they'll even throw in shipping, which will stop the ass streaming from the post office. So go to adamandeve.com and use the promo code STATIC. And that's probably the most convoluted one of those we've ever done.
It really was. But here, I do have to correct a little bit of English. You did say that we'd get 50% off the item to shove up our ass. They don't actually take 50% off the item. They take 50% off the price of the item.
Smart ass. All right, you know what? I'm not talking to you anymore. I'm talking to Hart Fisher, the most dangerous man in comics.
You do that.
Hello, Hart.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
It's funny. Your voice sounds familiar. It's like we talk every week or something.
That might happen, and fuck being the most dangerous man in comics, guys. I'm the scariest motherfucker on the planet.
I've been to your YouTube channel. I'm not going to argue with that.
Oh, yeah, man. Oh, yeah. When they're banning your books that are, you know, a 10-page comic book story is so fucking scary they got to ban it in the land of the free and the home of the brave, you know I know how to knock boots.
Well, and then you're also banned from Wikipedia. Can you tell us
a little bit
about
that? Yeah, you got to love that. I'm good enough for Time Magazine, Larry King, Jerry Springer, Sally Jesse, Tattoo Savage, The A to Z Guide to Serial Killers, but I'm not good enough for Wikipedia. In fact, one of their representatives said that I had to prove my relevance. Well, I'd like to know when you have to prove relevance to define a term.
Well, and then there's a lot of irrelevant shit on Wikipedia. You actually...
Yeah.
I mean, tell me if I'm wrong here. Of the 5 or so comic books that have ever been declared legally obscene, didn't you write 3 or 4 of those? That's
correct.
Relevant,
in fact,
isn't it?
I should be on Wikipedia for this sole thing alone. I'm the only comics creator I know who's kicked Marvel Comics ass for copyright and trademark infringement. I don't know any other comics creator who's kicked their ass and forced them to cancel their book. And I did that with my serial killer title, Dark Angel.
Do you want to tell us, the people who might not be aware, a little bit about the details of Marvel's less than on the board tactics with you?
Well, essentially, for the people at home that don't know, before I was doing American Horrors, the world's best 24-hour uncut horror channel that you could get at Filmon, you could download the Filmon app for free and be watching American Horrors for free on any of your mobile devices. So I highly recommend that. As far as my comics career, I pissed off a lot of people. And we had an issue where Marvel Comics was publishing a book called Hell's Angel. And so the motorcycle gang sued them. And they won. And so they changed the title to Dark Angel. Well, that's my comic book. So I turned around and I sued them. And then eventually they turned around and they countersued me. I sued them for, you know, infringement of my copyrights, infringement on my trademarks, and they turned around and they countersued with a bullying suit where they said their character Thanos from the Jim Starlin Warlock comics, a purple gargoyle, was the same as my comic book The Thanatos Syndrome, which was about the Greek god of death and Greek myths of death. Has nothing to do with either one. Thanatos Syndrome to Thanos. Where's the link, guys? Your dude wears tights. Mine's a Greek myth. And I said, go fuck yourselves. You know, you can stuff your bullying suit up your ass. I'll fight that one too and I'll win. And they dropped it and then they canceled the comic book and we settled out of court. So for that thing alone, I deserve to be in fucking Wikipedia. But deserve has nothing to do with it, as we know in this world. There's some asshole at Wikipedia or a couple of them that have some kind of problem with me. And that's the root of every censorship issue you will ever run into. It's either some guy who's got a problem or there's a political reason behind it.
Well, let's go back a little bit to your comic book days. Tell us a little bit about the time you faked your own death as a practical joke.
Yeah, you know, back in 1998, in the infancy of the internet, I didn't quite know the reach of the interweb. And I'm kind of known for being a practical joker. Like, my friends know, watch out around me around April Fool's Day. So I decided, and this was in the midst of being hated, you know, my books were being banned. I had a whole print run. I did these Jeffrey Dahmer comic books, and they really upset a bunch of people. And the second largest distributor took their orders of about between 1,300 and 1,400 books. They paid me for them, and then they burned them instead of giving them to their stores. So I was undergoing a lot of crazy, fucked up shit. And I was sick of the people whispering bullshit behind my back. So for April Fool's Day of 98, we faked my death. Me and a couple of guys, Joe Janofsky, and some of the guys at Boneyard Press, some of the dudes at the advertising agency I worked at Samson West, we went online and we pulled this hoax where I was dead for about a week. And it took the Comics Journal and the Comic Buyer's Guide to team up and track down the reality of my death. In the meantime, me and my friends were all going online under pseudonyms, trying to pick fights and trying to start wars. And, you know, one buddy of mine even, he put up that I killed myself because I was gay and couldn't deal with it. I was like, you fucker, that'll stick with me for life, you bastard. But it was pretty good. It was a pretty good prank. And I didn't realize how far it would go. It went over the whole country. They were going to run my obituary in Wizard magazine, and they didn't do it because another creator had died and they didn't want too much of a bummer in one issue. It was pretty crazy. And the funniest thing about the whole thing was I did it because I wanted to hear all the bullshit people were saying about me. But instead, dude, it changed my life because it really let me know how many people out there actually cared about the work I was doing, how many people actually liked what I was doing. And a lot of my heroes surprised me. A lot of people I wasn't aware of were reading my work and came out and defended me and said some really wonderful things. And that right there really changed my head. But the shittiest part of the joke was, you know, a lot of my friends got hurt. I didn't expect it to reach so many people. It went all the way back to my hometown in Chicago. My next door neighbors were asking my mother, you know, oh, Doris, when's the funeral? And my parents were in on the joke. So luckily they could go, ha ha, he's not dead, you know, but still it blew up bigger than I ever thought it would.
Well, you definitely win a place in the Troll Hall of Fame.
Because, oh, yeah.
Yeah, well done.
Especially.
Well, here's a side note for the Troll Hall of Fame. The Comics Buyer's Guide, those assholes, after the joke was over, they were calling my boss at the ad agency trying to get him to fire me. They were telling him that he needed to fire me, literally. And they didn't know he was in on the joke. He thought it was hilarious. Fucking morons.
Yeah, when I tried to get a job at Comic Buyer's Guide, when I brought up your name as being part of my show, that didn't go over so hot.
They're dicks, and I've taken it to them ever since. Plus, they censor ads. I had an issue where Diamond Distribution, the only real distributor of comics left standing now, they've got clear guidelines of what is adult in an ad and what you can or cannot do in an ad. And as a professional business person, when you give me the rules, I follow the rules. Actually, I mean, I'm known as a rule breaker, but there's times to do that and there's times not to. You know, you're not going to be on the swimming blocks and hit the guy next to you before you jump off and do your race. It's bullshit. So we tried to kind of I lost my train of thought there, guys. Help me get back to it.
Well, you were talking about following the rules as a professional businessman.
Yeah, as a professional graphic designer and dealing with diamonds. So we did a book called Babylon Crush, A Bondage Christmas. And on the cover was our dominatrix superhero character who is astride Santa Claus, who's on his hands and knees, and he's got a gag ball in his mouth. There's no nudity. There's no actual sexual content. She's not whipping him. You know, she's sitting on his back and riding him like a pony. And Diamond banned it. And they said, you know, hey, we can't have this. And they couldn't give me a reason. So I'm like, motherfucker. So I made a second Babylon Crush ad that had a nun being decapitated with nipples and tits and ass. That was fine. That was A-OK. So I took a full-page ad out in the Comic Buyer's Guide, and I made my own article, and I put the ad that was banned and the ad that I placed, and I talked about what I did and how I made the second ad more violent than the first, more fucked up, more, you know, just like South Park did with the censors at the MPAA, with bigger, longer, and uncut. Every time the MPAA came to them and said, we want this cut, they went back to them with a more fucked up edit. And that's exactly what I did. And the Comics Buyer's Guide banned the ad for its political content.
Political.
So fuck the Comic Buyer's Guide. Maggie Thompson, go fuck yourself, fucking choke and die, you cunt. All you assholes that run the Comic Buyer's Guide, go fuck yourselves, you motherfuckers. They don't put my comics in their price guide. That's the other part of it. If you go look up the Dahmer book, a lot of times it won't be listed in price guides. That's the way they deal with outlaws now. They try to ignore you. They try to cut you out of the guide. Well, fuck you, Maggie. Fuck you, Comic Buyer's Guide. I'm going to outlast you and crush you.
See, now, Josh, I told you, next time we need to get, you know, I'm sick and tired of these timid, soft-spoken guests. And
because he's been hounding me for a while to get you on here.
Exactly. And because you do Heart Attack, segment on Josh's other show, What the Fuck, and and you've always been a great guest there. I've been hounding Josh. I'm like, you got to get him on Lost in the Static. Give him a full hour. And
well, that's
and
cool.
So
thank you.
I would like to go back to your Dahmer books because this, like I said, I went through your YouTube channel and I watched your appearance on Sally Jesse Raphael and where you absolutely devastated her logically. Well done. And then
that's the best they could make it look, man. You got to remember the editors that were there. What happened during the show? She was a stuttering fool for like a couple minutes with her jaw between her tits. She just had nothing to say to the hypocrisy of what her show was. You know, they're saying I'm an evil person and hurting these victims' families, and I'm like, you have them on the show hoping they're going to cry right now. You're hurting them right now so you could sell more orange juice. You're far worse than me. I never, ever thought that I would be on a talk show when I did the Dahmer comic book. That was not the point of it. I never thought I'd be there. So I have a real hatred for the hypocrites like Sally Jesse and Jerry Springer, you know, all those talk show parasites. I really hate those people. Nancy Grace, I hate them with a passion.
Oh, yeah, I don't blame you, and I've worked in television long enough to know how amazingly fake they are. But before we start talking about the shows... Tell me about your Dahmer books and the reception that they got, because I know that in doing some research, I've seen some actual really positive reception of the books back in the day, and of course then there was the whole the whole fallout, that's a good word. So tell me about the Dahmer books and what motivated you to write them, and what was the experience like when you finished writing them?
Well, essentially, the Jeffrey Dahmer comic books, when I launched Boneyard Press, I was just trying to do comic books that I loved. I was fresh out of, I actually started Boneyard Press when I was finishing up college. I was getting a degree in art at the University of Illinois. I was a bouncer at a rock and roll bar called Mabel's. I did martial arts, you know, I was just having fun with my life. And I had a friend of mine who was the original publisher of Faust. Dan Mattson was the publisher at North Star. And Dan had gotten out of comics. And he called me up to say, hey, you saw this Kitty Kelly, Nancy Reagan biography, right? And you're seeing all the press that it's getting. And people are really interested in this. You should do bio books on serial killers. And I was like, really? Hadn't even occurred to me. And he says, have you heard of this Jeffrey Dahmer guy? And I'm like, no. I hadn't, because at that point I was actually pretty bored with serial killers. I went through a phase in high school and in the early part of my college where I read tons and tons of psychology on murderers and serial killers and criminal psych, and I had been taking a lot of psych classes at college. And so I was interested in it, but you know, I decided to write the book and I started researching it, and what I first was sickened by was the cavalier celebrity way they were dealing with Jeffrey Dahmer. I felt, here's a pedophile, here's a scumbag. You know, how can you be talking about how handsome he is? He's a douche. And so I set out to do a bio that handled this tasteful subject matter as tastefully as I could. I hired a newspaper illustration artist, and we really could have gone the gore route, but it's actually a very tame book. And I just went to the library and did my research. And when I released it, I didn't think about it much. It did okay. We had a print run of the first printing was 4,000 copies. And we had about 3,000 in sales, maybe 3,500 in sales. And so some reporter in Milwaukee bought the book at a comic book store. He took his film crew, and he started going to the victims' families' homes and surprise ambush interviewing them with the book. He'd show up at their door, he'd jam the book in their face, and he'd say, "Aren't you upset about this?" "Well, no fucking shit. I'm sitting at home doing nothing, watching TV, and some cocksucking reporter brings up my child's death on my doorstep. But I'm the bad guy, guys. Hart Fisher, the guy who created the comic, he's the bad guy, not the guy who picked up the gun and shot the victim in the face. Oh, no, not that person. It's the gun manufacturer, right, guys? It's not the person who actually did the horrible action." So this douche started this controversy, and a ambulance-chasing lawyer got involved. This is literally a guy who had his posters on the bus. "Have you fallen at work? Call me." He's one of those douchebags. So him and these, quote, community leaders started using the victims' families for their own political purposes, and they got greedy. They wanted to win a legal precedent with a small publisher so they could go after big publishers for bigger money. All these guys cared about was money. None of them gave a shit. You could really see why their children or loved ones were murdered. You know, people don't like to talk about the behavior of a victim. You know, you don't ask to be killed, but guys, are you really going to go home with someone and pose naked for $50 with some dude you met in a bar? Come on. Come on, motherfuckers. You got to be responsible for what you did. I'm not going home with strangers and posing fucking naked for $50. That doesn't sound too kosher to me, man. Does not sound kosher to me at all. And even the child that was given back to Dahmer, the two black women had found this 14-year-old boy walking down the street naked, bleeding from his anus, and drugged. And Dahmer convinced him that this was his gay boyfriend, and they had a falling out, and the police gave the kid back to Dahmer. What no one ever fucking talks about is that kid knew Jeffrey Dahmer. That kid's older brother had been molested by Jeffrey Dahmer, and Dahmer had gone to jail for molesting that kid's older brother. So that fucking kid knew what he was doing being around Dahmer. Seriously. Seriously. So these people got my book and got all upset about it, and all I wanted to do was provide knowledge to people so they could avoid fucking serial killers, and so I could combat this celebrity sex symbol they were turning him into. And instead, they fucking judo flipped it and turned me into some Satan-worshipping, tattooed metal moron. And that's what happened. And then they sued me, and we fought tooth and nail back and forth for years.
And, again, going to your YouTube channel, which, how do we get there?
If anybody wants to check it out, you can see all of these Sally Jesse, Jerry Springer clips. If you want to see Sally Jesse have her fucking ass handed to her with the lead singer from My Chemical Romance in the audience when he's 15 years old, you're going to want to check that out at www.youtube.com/CrimePaysHeart. And that's H-A-R-T. Go ahead and look that up. Crime Pays Heart. Or you could also check out the American Horrors YouTube channel at www.youtube.com. Ah, I'm all fucked up now, guys. I need more coffee.
YouTube.com/, and that ain't coffee you're smoking. that's okay. So YouTube.com/ what?
American Horrors.
American Horrors. Perfect. Yep. And, you really do. It was funny because my wife and I were watching this together a couple of days ago, and she goes, "I didn't expect that man to be that well-spoken."
Mm-hmm.
So you really do manage to catch people off guard. And
they make a mistake by judging me on my hair and some tattoos, and they think, "Oh, I got that guy's number." Well, fuck you. I'm smarter than you, motherfucker. I got a lot of experience. I got a lot of brains. And even better than that, I wasn't alone putting together those appearances. You know, we would do a talk show appearance, and then we'd get the tape, and me and my buddies would sit around, and they'd tear me a new asshole. They would just make fun of me and fucking rip on my ass. But we would figure out the script, and we started figuring out, well, how do we deal with these people? Because they were doing the same show every time. And we're like, well, what are we going to get out of this? Like the whole protest march on my home. We manipulated those stupid idiots into doing it. We felt that the controversy was losing steam and I needed to sell more books to pay for my fucking legal fees. So we figured, well, what can we do to provoke them into a march? Well, we did it when I was on Springer. I just got on there and I read like I was reading from my script. And I'm like, you guys have been blowing smoke about shutting me down. You're never going to shut me down. You're never going to do a march on me. That's never going to happen. You're just blowing smoke. Well, those stupid fucks marched on me in about a month and a half after that. And I got on CNN Headline News because they're so fucking stupid.
Nice and predictable. And from what I understand, oh, yeah. you had a very nice reception for them, too.
Yeah, well, the crazy thing about it was is this whole situation just kept getting crazier and crazier. I mean, let's face it, folks, they're just comic books. No one's going to make you pick it up. I mean, it's not like you're going to walk by a comic book in the comic book store. It's going to jump off the shelf and fucking bite you. But if you listen to these assholes, you'd think, oh, it's going to bite you. It's going to pervert you. You know, I've got fans that have told me that their mom saw me on a talk show, and they looked over at little Johnny, and they said, you will never read that man's books. Well, guess who's my biggest fan? The kid whose mommy told him not to read my shit, you stupid whore. The more you repress something, the more it will come back on you. We all know this. It's about energy. The more you compress something, the bigger explosion you're going to get.
Exactly.
That's how they make big bombs, you know, and that's exactly what happened here is they kept coming after me, and it kept getting uglier and uglier. And when the protest march was announced, I had the number two cop in Champaign show up at my house. You had the captain, and then you had the number two guy. He shows up with the hat. I felt like I had the dude from Fort Apache, the Bronx, was showing up at my fucking house. And he's got an assistant. And they tell me that the FBI's informants say the KKK is going to protest march on my behalf. Well, guys, I fucking hate the KKK. I hate racism. I think anyone who says, oh, I'm better than you because I was born with white skin, you're a fucking retard. You got nothing, motherfucker. If the best thing you've got to brag about is what you were born with, you ain't got nothing to brag about, motherfucker. A dog's born with a tail. It ain't nothing special. So getting back to these jackasses, they're telling me to leave town, dude. They wanted me to leave town. And I'm like, no, I am not going to be chased out of my house. I'm not leaving town, and fuck the KKK. So I went out, and I'd been working security at a bar for a while. So all my buddies that bounced with me, all my buddies from the Taekwondo Club came down. All my crazy comic book friends came down, and we put a party fence around the property, and we had a SWAT truck there. And you're going to have to love this little bit of selective enforcement of the law. These people did not get a permit to march. They did not get any kind of thing to do anything publicly. They didn't get any permit. But when the city of Champaign found out that I was going to have a barbecue, they threw their own barbecue for these assholes in a city park at the city's expense. Can you fucking believe this shit? Because they heard I was having a barbecue. Okay, so I had a live band there, my buddy's Third Stone. The band's still around. You can still get their music. It's called Third Stone. Fucking great tune. So I had my friend's band is going to play. The protest marchers are standing in the middle of the street, and they're screaming at me that I should burn in hell and die on a megaphone, but the police shut down my band for a noise ordinance in which you cannot be heard past the sidewalk. What the fuck, motherfucker? Bullshit.
Wow.
So I've dealt with a lot of crazy, fucking hypocritical, two-faced bullshit, man. But it worked. I was on CNN Headline News. We sold a lot of Jeffrey Dahmer versus Jesus Christ books. We sold a lot of Dahmer Zombie Squad. Those morons helped me sell and pay for my legal defense.
Well, I wanted to ask you, I showed Scott your Verminators appearance. Can you tell us a little bit about the Verminators and those giant Chewbacca rats you had in your attic?
Oh, yeah. You got to love it. I live over in Los Angeles, and I'm in a burb called Highland Park. And I live in this old house. It was built, like, I think in like 1921 or 1929. It's a wonderful craftsman house, but it's a little run down. The building managers and the owners, they've let it get run down. It was meth heads living here before me. So my wife was recovering from cancer and was recovering from radiation and chemo and was pretty weak, and her immune system was down. And we had a rat infestation, and I could not get the building manager to properly remove the rats. They just kept sending over these jackasses. They'd come over to the house and be like, "Oh, you got a lot of holes in there." "Yeah." "Oh, I bet you got a lot of rats in there." "Yeah." "Oh, can't really do anything about that." "What, are you fucking kidding me? Are you kidding me?" He sent like four different assholes out to tell me there was nothing they could do. Bullshit. So I went on a Craigslist, and I'm looking around, and lo and behold, the Craigslist, right? The Verminators were looking for people. They didn't say the Verminators, but it was a pest control show. And I just put my name in and said, "This is my problem. This is my issue. Can you help me?" And I sent in a couple clips from YouTube, and they called me back. And the funny thing is it turned out the producer's boyfriend went to the same college as me, used to go to the bar I was a bouncer at. The editor of the show was a fan of my work, and he couldn't wait to cut it. And they really liked that we were Hollywood people, so they got to have a lot of fun and shoot a lot of stuff. We did reenactments, and the thing is they didn't believe me how big these fucking rats were. They had an abatement company come in. What the hell were they called? I can't remember the name of the pest control company. They were great. And they came in, and they started doing their work, and they were like, "Holy shit. I thought Hart was joking when he said it sounded like Bigfoot was having a party up there, but look at the size of this rat." And I'm like, "I told you, because my dog had killed like three rats in the backyard." And these were not little bullshit rats. These were like fucking grizzly bear rats. I mean, these fucking things were huge. And my wife's immune system is down. So they came out, and it was great that I had someone to clean out my rats, but the producers of the show were kind of dicks. You know, they fed us Subway. They're not paying us. They had me do stunts for nothing. I'm not paying anything. I'm not being paid money to do this. And so they've got me in my bathtub with a bug wrangler while he dangles the biggest fucking black widow I've ever seen in my fucking life over my big toe. Because I had a thing where there was one time where I was in the bathtub because we had a black widow and rat infestation in the house of death. And they were dangling this giant black widow over my toe because I had been taking a bubble bath one time, and I killed the black widow on my toe. So they're doing this, and they're like, "Can we go a little closer?" And I'm like, "A little closer? Can we go a little closer? This fucking thing's right over my toe." And I'm like, "That's about all I can handle." And that never made it into the show. Of course, right?
Of course.
But it was cool. They got rid of the rats. So that's what I was happy about. And frankly, it's kind of nice because the Verminator show literally was the very first time in my entire career I had a media outlet, a mainstream media outlet, actually treat me fairly and decently. You know, most of the time when you're dealing with being interviewed, one of the reasons I went to the talk shows was because when you're interviewed by, let's say, CNN, those cocksuckers don't have your answers up the way they're answered. They re-edit the interview. So one question will have a different answer. Like, I'll answer what my favorite hamburger is, and they'll take the answer to that, and they'll put it on, you know, "American Horrors is the most bloody meat." You know what I'm saying? Like, they recut it so that one answer to one question ends up being the answer to a different question. That's fucking deceitful, man. That's seriously deceitful. And that's what happened to me again and again and again and again. And that's why I did the talk shows, because they couldn't cut my answers.
Yeah, because you've got audience reaction. Oh, well, they put that in.
Exactly.
Later,
but... I mean, they still massaged it. Like, when I beat the shit out of Sally Jesse verbally, they recut that. They turned down the audience applause, like when I did Jerry Springer. I won the audience around me near the end. And when you watch the show, you can't tell that. Because they tune down the audience applause. They remix it so it doesn't seem like you're making a point.
Sure. Trust me, I've had plenty of experience doing that. Mike, now we've talked about kind of what made you famous in the past with the Dahmer books and the fallout from that and Boneyard.
Well, the funny thing is it wasn't just the Dahmer book. After the Dahmer book, I did Kill Image, where I killed the founders of Image. And that really scared the shit out of everybody. Then I did Kill Marvel, and that really upset Marvel. And then I did the Taste of Cherry book for Glenn Danzig with Christian Moore. And that got banned and seized in Oklahoma, and was banned in Oklahoma. To this day, it's obscene material. And so I kept up with it. You know, I did the O.J. books, and I got sued by O.J. We did the Rush Limbaugh Must Die books, and Rush Limbaugh gave us a thumbs up on the air. And then Howard Stern, we did the Howard Stern versus Rush Limbaugh book, and I offended Howard Stern.
That takes work.
That's a cap.
That's definitely a feather in your cap. Now,
fuck yeah.
Now, let's talk about your current project, American Horrors. What made you get started?
Well, you know, I kind of got bored with comic books. You know, I did it for so long, and I found that the market was collapsing on itself. And frankly, I wanted a wider audience. So several years back, like 4 or 5 years, actually longer than that, after my wife's illness, we started discussing what business we wanted to go into. We had been running a service company. We were doing post-production work, which is editing, you know, video editing and feature films and some. And we did do some adult stuff at the post house, but all of it was just bread and butter. You know, it's just a service. We're just providing a service for people. And we wanted to get out of that industry because we weren't happy with it. It wasn't fun. It was fun at first because I got to learn about post-production because I really wanted to be making films. And I had finished my first film, The Garbage Man, and I was eyeing distribution. And what I was seeing was that distribution sucked for creators. I saw that the real bottleneck for a creator was, do I really want to do a horror show and have a bunch of people not get it and not get it and not get it and know the audience will get it and fucking know that audiences will love the American Horrors TV show, but dealing with the executives, they had no clue. They just don't understand. And so I decided, you know, well, why am I going to let some other guy decide if my show goes on or not? Why am I going to put myself in the same situation of, I have a comic book and I want it to be published and I'm going to go to Marvel and DC and get on my hands and knees and beg and kiss their ass and go through whatever they want me to go through? Fuck that shit. I'm here to own the game. I decided that I was sick of just being the creator. I wanted to be the guy who ran the fucking game, the guy who decided what gets made, what goes on the air. I wanted my own TV channel. And so we recreated it. Originally, American Horrors was a TV show that we did for Europe. We shot it, we cut it, it was done. We sold off 17 territories to Europe, and we were very excited. And then the market crash happened in 09 and 08 when real estate and everything hit the fan. So all the places that we were going to be on the air, they lost their money, things didn't happen, so we had a TV show sitting around. And I'm like, fuck this bullshit. I'm going to start my own network. I'm going to start my own 24-hour uncut horror channel. In fact, fuck this begging bullshit. I'm going to own this industry. Fuck this shit. If you want to know what I'm here to be, I'm here to be Sumner Redstone. I'm here to be fucking Disney. I'm here to create an empire. And American Horrors is the beginning. I'm here to own horror in a way that no man has ever done before. I want to own horror the way Disney owns family entertainment. You know where Disney's from? He's from motherfucking Chicago. Where's Hugh Hefner from? Motherfucking Chicago. Obama. Where's Sumner Redstone from? Most people don't know. Sumner Redstone nearly died in a major, major fire in Chicago where he held onto the side of a burning building while he was on fire. And who's the president now? Obama. Where's he from? Chicago. Chicago's taking over, motherfuckers. I'm taking over horror. Lionsgate said it. Their head of marketing and publicity said, we know Hart. We love Hart. But he's too hardcore for Lionsgate. That's a fucking quote. The people that released Hostel, I'm too hardcore?
That's amazing.
For Hostel and the Devil's Rejects?
That's a compliment.
That's right, I am. So come to American Horrors and join my party.
Well, hopefully in the future we will be, because Scott and I are working on something that hopefully will be on American Horrors, But so you've got the channel. What problems have you run into? Have you run into any real issues with FearNet or Chiller or any of that? I mean, have they kind of tried to dick slap you at all?
Well, you know, we had this issue where FX Networks ripped us off with American Horror Story. And at first I was very angry. We were selling American Horrors at NAFTA and different shows. And we know they registered their copyrights right after they probably saw all our packets about the show. I heard from several people at the NAFTA that where I had been, the high muckety mucks, they were only there to see pilots they could steal and rip off because they knew the little guy they could step on. And what I have shown people time in and time out, I'm the wrong motherfucker to try to step on. I am the wrong motherfucker. I fight, I will bite, I will claw, and you cannot bury me. You cannot. I come out of my own grave every night. It's where I live, baby.
Like
I've been dead so many times, it's not even fucking funny. And I'm not kidding about that one either.
So,
but as far as technical issues and what's happened, you know, we've launched with a company called Philmon. And Philmon is owned by billionaire Alki David. Alki David is that madman who paid a dude $1 million to streak an Obama political rally. And Alki loves what we do. He's very, very anti-authoritarian. Philmon is a forward-thinking company. It's a virtual cable company in which, forget about your satellite dish. Forget about the cable coming into your wall. Essentially what Philmon is, it's a virtual cable network that when you get your cable from Philmon, you can get it anywhere you can get a Wi-Fi signal. You know what I'm saying? How different is that from getting TV? Well, it's so awesome. You could be watching American Horrors anywhere in the world. There's 5.5 million Facebook app downloads for mobile phones alone. Not even counting the people we've got on. We're approved and we're on the Roku box now. It's a new world, guys. It's a whole new world, and TV is completely different. YouTube is announcing their own slate of original programming. They've been working on it for years, but I don't care because I know it's going to be corporate shit. That's what I see when I look at the television today. I just see an opening. I see that the people that run these corporations have forgotten that they're in the job of entertaining motherfuckers. I am in the job of bread and circuses. My job is to create a horror channel that fucking rocks so hard that horror fans never turn it off. They never turn it off. That's the goal. I love what I do. There's no shareholders at American Horrors. It's just me. There's no fucking committee. It's me. You're dealing with me. That's it. The buck stops with me. And that's one of the things I like about dealing with Alki. You know, I have access to him. I get to talk to Alki. I was in the offices yesterday. I dropped off a bunch of new programming. And that's the cool thing, too, is we have a lot of original programming at American Horrors. We have a TV show called True Crimes. We have our interview show called The American Horrors Intermission. We have the American Horrors television show. We have Fright Asylum, which is a really cool review show done by Woody Mex. And we've just got more and more cool content coming to the channel. It's original content. We're working on a new music video show. We play uncut music videos. We play uncut movies. All this shit is just, you know, out there. And since there's not a corporation behind it, it's got real juice. It's actually fun and takes chances. And you need to be watching the network because you're not going to see everything. There's things that are on there that will disappear. If you're not watching, you're going to miss stuff. And I'm not going to post it on fucking YouTube. Fuck the instant gratification generation. There's a reason why Boneyard Press hasn't been reprinted. If you can't find my books, too bad. You didn't get to live that party. That party's over. Boneyard's over, man. That's years ago. I'm into American Horrors now. And I'm here to own the horror industry. I'm here to make the best horror films I can possibly make. The best horror programming I can possibly make. And the great thing with Philmon, holy shit, there's real money back in this. This is real technology. These guys are making real breakthroughs in technology. They have invented a device called the Philmon Air. And when you subscribe to Philmon and you get, let's say, their USA Pure Pack and you subscribe, they will send you this Philmon Air device. It's a TV thing that you hook up to your phone and you could watch just broadcast right out of the air.
Nice.
Interesting.
Yeah, pretty fucking nice because these guys are here to service the consumer. Because that's my whole thing is these guys have forgotten about the fan. I have had conflicts with the technology. Apple is constantly fucking with their code and what you can do, and they don't want to report the ratings. That's a big issue we've run into. It's been very difficult to establish exactly who's watching what show. There's no Nielsen ratings for mobile phones.
Right.
And that's the biggest technological hurdle I've run into so far is ascertaining our ratings.
Are you kidding me?
What I'm seeing is our subscriptions are starting to pile up. I mean, it's expanding. The word is starting to get out there. And I guess the only other real problem we've had is that the status quo of the horror industry, let's say Fangoria, Rue Morgue, the quote bloodydisgusting.com, there's been a complete media blackout on American Horrors. These people refuse to write about what we're doing. They refuse to allow the consumers to know that we're here. And I've got uncut Danzig videos every Sunday for Satanic Sunday. There is no other horror channel that plays only satanic horror films on fucking Sunday. Nobody. And you can get American Horrors for as little as $1.95 a month, man. If you don't have a mobile device, if you can't download a film on app, you could subscribe for $1.95 a month, man. That's fucking cheap. That's a 2-liter bottle of Pepsi.
Well, you know what a funny little piece of fallout from you being on, like, What the Fuck and that, and you doing American Horrors? People have heard about the Boneyard stuff. That stuff is starting to be sought after in the back issue market now, Hart.
Really?
Yeah, I've heard people go, I keep hearing them talk about this Babylon Crush and A Taste of Cherry, and people are starting to look for this stuff.
Well, that's the thing. They can't find it. This is the instant gratification generation. They used to say that about us when we were younger. And it was us. Oh, you know, I didn't have video games when I was a kid, blah, 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 blah. And here we are, older, and I hear the same complaints. That's what I laugh about. I hear the same complaints about this generation they said about me, that they said in the 90s, that they said in the 80s. It's the same shit every fucking time. So I kind of tune it out, you know. These kids are smarter than people think. They're smarter than what's on the web because you have a persona on the internet that isn't you. That's a written persona. It's not you. And then there's the person that you meet and the person that you talk to in the flesh, and that's a different guy.
Very, very different. And managing those two people can be difficult, but I can tell you that since Josh kind of introduced me to your work, and now thankfully even to you, you okay back there, by the way?
Yeah, I was up late last night. We're in post-production on so much of our new content. I've got my own staff of editors, and I supervise them. So we're really a serious pirate ship, and so I spend a lot of my time at night, you know, working on this stuff when it's a little cooler out. And there's a little bit less of a clog on the web, so we can FTP our stuff up to film on.
Well, good. I'm glad to know that there's more coming down the way. But one thing that I did have to say to you is, I want to say thank you. One of the things that Josh and I talk about with modern society quite a bit is personal responsibility. And you say that Filmon has no board of directors, and you have openly said, or not Filmon.
Well, not Filmon,
not,
I mean
not Filmon. American Horrors has no board of directors, and American Horrors, the buck stops with you. And
yep.
I just, if I were there, I would shake your hand so heartily right now, because I see, you know, I can see Mom and Dad looking at you on television with the long hair and the tattoo and looking at little Johnny and going, you're never going to be like that man. But to tell you the truth, I hope that the little Johnnies in the world take a look at you and do eventually become at least a little bit like you in taking that personal responsibility and taking those risks and then taking those steps forward. And I wanted to take a moment on the show to say thank you for being a decent role model in today's world of Snooki, et cetera.
Did you ever think you'd hear that, Hart?
Thanks, dude. You know what? I've actually been hearing this quite a bit. Since I have about, you know, I've been hated for a long time, guys. You just don't understand what it's like to be hated. The reason I hate a person like Nancy Grace, and the reason why I had a hatred for Sally Jesse, is those people don't even know how much they fucked up my life. They really don't. They don't know how much that press, people believe what they see on TV. Okay, and those shows impacted my personal life. My mother worked for the Department of Public Aid. My parents were divorced, and my mother worked for the Department of Public Aid dealing with, you know, poor folks in Caprini Green and the Taylor homes and the projects. And so she was embarrassed to tell people who the fuck I was because of those cocksuckers on the air. They made my mother's life difficult. They made a lot of people in my life, it made their lives difficult, a lot of my family members. And I had a murdered loved one. And when I was at the funeral, people were coming up to me and they're like, oh, you know, I was worried about her. We thought you were going to hurt her. But now we see you crying at the funeral. You know, we know you're all right. We know you cared. I would never have gotten that reaction if it wasn't for cocksuckers like Sally Jesse, all those judgmental pricks. So I have a deep, deep hatred for people like Nancy Grace, this rush to judgment in our society. So the thing that we have to understand is when you have a trial, it doesn't mean you have the whole story. It doesn't mean you know everything. One side presents its story, The other side presents its story, but they both withhold information. And then the TV people get involved, and they lie like fuck. And we already know the police will lie to the press. When my girl was murdered, I thought she was stabbed to death. They told me the wrong shit, and they told the press the wrong shit. So we're running around judging Anthony, Casey, or whoever the fuck. Remember, the police lie to try to catch the killer. They put false information into the press to try to catch the killer. Remember that, motherfuckers. You rush to judgment pieces of shit. You can fuck up people's lives. Nice people like me. I'm actually a nice person, man. Most people don't know. Like, if you know me in real life, I'm a good guy, you know? I have literally given the leather jacket off my back to kids in need. You know, I have helped people. I've heard people screaming out on the street, and I have stopped fucking muggings. I'm the real goddamn thing, guys. I'm not a punk. I'm not a poser. I'm not an actor. I'm the real thing. I'm a real human being. And I'm multidimensional, you know, and I'm here to make a difference. I'm doing this because what I want to change. I want my horror channel out there. And when I present TV shows, I don't want to do reality garbage. That's just fucking garbage. Most people are observers and they follow. I really want to give them something new to follow. I want to show them what the fuck a real man is, you know, and fuck the media. Fuck them in the ass. You're never going to see me crying on camera and apologizing because I said something mean to somebody and their feelings were hurt. Too fucking bad. Too fucking bad. And I think this country needs this. I think we really need this personal responsibility. Like those people at Pfizer, and we talk about corporations being humans. They're not humans. They can't be put in jail for killing people or stealing from people. Therefore, they do not deserve the same rights as a human being. How many people at Pfizer went to jail for all the guys that died from their heart medication that didn't work?
None.
Nobody. Nobody. Did they even get fined? Maybe. And now Governor Brown has just cut, you know, $600 more million out of the court budget in California. So all medical malpractice lawsuits are grinding to a halt. You think that's a fucking accident, folks? It's not.
No.
But then again, I'm going off on a political rant. We should talk about my work more, right?
Well, I do have to, I will tell listeners this, and Josh just mentioned this on the other show, but here it is straight from the horse's mouth. You have no competition. I like I said, through Film On, I've been watching, and I've been looking for good horror stories out there. And there are a few out there, but they're few and far between. And when I fired up American Horrors, I found, a lot of the older horror movies that you don't see anywhere else that are either fun or truly scary in their own little way, or mm-hmm. I see a lot of new content, a lot of interviews in the industry, and frankly, I think that whether you wanted to or not, whatever your goal was, you say you want to own the horror genre, I think even if you didn't, you would. Even if you didn't want to, you definitely would own the horror genre, because there is nobody out there to compete with. The other networks...
Fearnet and Chiller are jokes.
The Fearnet and Chiller are jokes. The ones that I saw in Film On, much respect to Film On for carrying them, but the only thing those other two networks do is serve to make American Horrors look that much better. They're all shot on shittio stuff, and you can tell it's a director going, all right, I've had a crush on this chick. I've casted her. Now how do I get her naked? And American Horrors is asking, how do I scare the shit out of my audience? And there's a huge difference there. So thank you for that. And there it is, straight from the horse's mouth.
Thank you. I really appreciate you noticing, because, you know, we work really hard here. We really care about what we're doing. I love this stuff. I horror, you know, I've had a very violent life. I've had a lot of violence happen to me, to my loved ones, murder, rapes, molestation. I've seen it all. And so for me, horror saved my life. Horror really helped me get out of my head. When I was in a really dark, bad place, that's when I was doing my most extreme stuff. Cause I had so much fucked up shit going on in my life. I needed a fiction to take me out of it for a moment. And, you know, Nancy Drew Mysteries wasn't going to do that. I needed something that was going to shake me up and take me out of my head, cause I was in a really bad place. And that's really a lot of what horror does, is it helps you to process things. And these people at the corporations, they only see it as a way to get a dollar. to them, it's one step above pornography. And they don't understand what's scary. They don't know what works. And being publicly traded corporations, they're in the business of satisfying their shareholders, not their consumers. They're not in the business of satisfying customers. They're not. They're publicly traded corporations. Their whole job is to generate income more and more and more. And it's not about providing a good service. And at American Horrors, I'm here to provide the best damn service I can to the horror fans, because I'm one of them. And I'm proud of what we do. I'm proud of what's on my channel. Now, granted, I don't like every feature film that's on my channel. I will not say that. But when I put it on there, there's something about it that I think an audience will like. There's something about that film that I think has validity, that I think a horror fan will go, I want to check out this, you know? And then there's movies like Frankenstein Eddie, where you can see a dude beat a chick to death with the fucking leg of a fucking cow in a meat locker.
Well, because I remember when Scott first downloaded the Filmon app, he said, I turned it on, and all I saw was some tits and somebody gets stabbed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even remember what the movie was, but he's just like, that's the first thing I saw, tits and stabbing.
I was sold.
Yeah. And we go to film festivals. We have film festival coverage, and you know, I don't take any shit from these assholes. So if somebody starts talking some shit, I give it right back to them. You know, because the whole thing is be entertaining, be real. Be real, because I think that this generation is tired of fakes. They're tired of manufactured personalities. And I think that they're hungry for the real thing, and that's what we got. I'm the real thing, and that's all I'm bringing is real steak.
Now, it's like I've told people before. I said reality television is the most controlled and manufactured reality that you can find out there.
I've been on reality TV, guys. It's all retakes. When you watch those date shows, when you watch, you know, boyfriend douchebags on MTV, it's all fake. All of it is fake. My Sweet 16, it's all fucking fake, guys. You've got people trying to egg it on. When you go on the talk show and you're backstage and you're sitting there, the producer comes in and says, look, you need to hold your point of view. You need to stick by your point of view. They're trying to manufacture controversy. They're trying to manufacture conflict. When you're on the talk show, they've got ringers in the audience, and they ask the questions that the studio wants. They start clapping at the point where the studio wants them to, and they lead the audience, and that's their job. Bread and circuses, man.
Speaking of ringers in the audience, like I told Josh, I looked at your reality show and interview show appearances, and you even mentioned earlier that the lead singer from My Chemical Romance, because I saw him and I was like, Josh, who the hell is that? He looks really familiar. Josh is like, I don't know, he runs some band called My Chemical Romance. And what the fuck was he doing on
we've only got 2 minutes left, but tell us in 2 minutes.
All right, well, I'll make it real quick. The reason that Gerard Way from My Chemical Romance was on Sally Jesse with me is he was in the audience as a Boneyard Press creator. He was there with his mother, and he actually asked a question and is identified as a Boneyard Press writer. And the reason you don't see that part on YouTube is because at one point I considered suing him over plagiarism for their bands plagiarizing my poetry and my work and their song lyrics, because that motherfucker lied about working for me, lied about having anything to do with me. In fact, this cocksucker on videotape said, if only there was somebody who believed in me when I was young. If there was only somebody who would have published my work when I was young. Do you know what a slap in the face that is? You poser son of a bitch, Mr. Way. You piece of shit. I was there. I believed in you. I was on the phone with this guy's mom talking to her about how we can keep him from being bullied in school. Fucking dick.
I'll tell you what. Let's go out on a positive note. Tell us again why American Horrors is so great and how we can get it and where can we find Hart Fisher?
Well, the best way to get American Horrors is to go to www.filmon.com. That's FILMON.com. And you can register. It takes about, if you're going to subscribe, it takes about 10 minutes. I did it myself. You could either subscribe to their whole cable package, or you could just subscribe to just American Horrors for $1.95 a month. And for that, you're going to get 24 hours every day, uncut, all horror you can't find. And a lot of this stuff is stuff that's not on Netflix Beyond. You can't find this online. You're not going to find it for a download if you're a pirate. This is hard to find horror stuff that you really want.
Absolutely.
So thank you very much, Art, for joining us today. I know that your time is valuable, so an hour means quite a bit to us.
Oh, my pleasure, guys. You know, I'm a press slut.
And when this airs, you'll be on this show, and then you'll be on What the Fuck about 4 hours later as well.
That's right, Josh. And the next time you do a What the Fuck, you better remember to tell people at the beginning of the show that I'm coming up, motherfucker.
Yep.
I'll try.
Bye, everybody. We're completely out of time.
Bye.